Thorny. As we venture into the R&R, two truths are consistent. We love our dear Montana state, and we love great beer. And you know who else feels the same? Jeremiah Johnson Brewing. Brewed in the heart of Montana in downtown Great Falls, Jeremiah Johnson takes Montana's finest ingredients to craft some of Montana's favorite beers. And now, Jeremiah Johnson's second tap room is open in downtown Coeur d'Alene. Their Citra IPA is probably one of my favorites. But we all know, Thorny, you're not the hop lover I am. You're more of a mountain man Scotch ale.
Well, Foley, I'm certainly not a mountain man, but you are right. I do love their mountain man Scotch ale. But come game day, you and I are both cracking their golden Bobcat Pale Ale. So when you're looking for a quality craft beer brewed with Montana roots, a relaxing tap room, or just a six-pack to take to your favorite Bobcat tailgate, Jeremiah Johnson delivers. Make your next beer a Jeremiah Johnson, and as always, go Cats.
Welcome, everybody, to the R&R CatCast, a fan-based podcast focusing on Montana State athletics. We're two dudes named Ryan from the state of Washington talking about our dear Montana State. We hope you enjoy. All right. Welcome back, Bobcat fans, and thanks for joining us on another episode of the R&R CatCast. I'm one of your hosts, Ryan Foley. Across the state from me is my good buddy, Ryan Thornburg. We are the Ryans of the R&R, the Montana State affiliate of the Big Sky Podcast Network. And we have a dang sponsor brewing dang beers in downtown Great Falls, Montana, with a second tap room in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Thorny, this is post-Frisco. This is post-national championship game. We're going to break it down today, buddy, but how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, man. It's our last post-game. Yeah, our post-game episode where we actually talk about a football game for a long time. I can't believe we're doing this in the middle of January. Crazy. I'm doing well, though, man. Outside of the pain still being all throughout my body from the game, I'm doing fine otherwise. How about you?
I'm doing well. We're doing this on a Wednesday night. We took Monday off to watch the national championship, which was a really good game.
Yeah.
Specifically in the fourth quarter. See, my dad went to Ohio State. And so we always grew up Buckeye fans, but he always told me secretively that he had like a SEC, like a Georgia fandom, a little bit of a little polling for Georgia. So we always rooted for the Bulldogs growing up, kind of not loudly, but I know my dad would pull for them. So, you know, if my dad was still around, he would have been pretty pleased to see Georgia pulled off against Alabama.
Yeah, that was a good game. It was we had talked about recording on Monday just to kind of do it while it's fresh in our heads, but Monday night rolled around. I was tired. I just wanted to watch football, and I was still pretty sad about the Bobcat game. So I was like, you know what? Let's just postpone this until Wednesday. Give us some more time to digest it and actually enjoy a football game that our team's not playing in.
Yeah, I think we were both really tired. I know I got back to Spokane around 11:30, and that was a long day in the airport at Dallas-Fort Worth.
Oh, yes.
Because We took the car back together, and I think I sat in that airport for, maybe 6 hours from 2 o'clock on, and then our flight was delayed. So, yeah, I didn't want to do anything Monday night, but here we are, man, Wednesday.
Here we are.
Recapping the final game. Who would have thought, going back to August, right, when we were penciling wins and losses, that we would play 15 games, we would have a game in January, we would go to Frisco, Texas, man. This is what a ride. What a pleasure to be a Bobcat fan this year.
No, it's such a privilege to be recording this podcast right now. We were one of only two teams left playing in the entire FCS. Like, it's just a storybook season. I want to start this episode off on a super positive note. It was such a fun season, and it was a, you know, just like you said, great time to be a Bobcat. The best season I can remember as a Bobcat fan. This is the best season I've ever had being a Bobcat fan. So we need to soak that in and make sure we step back and appreciate that before we get, you know, too down about the final result of anything.
Oh, no doubt. All right, let's give a rundown what we're going to do today. We're going to talk, Thorning and I are going to talk about our experience. For those of you who did not get to go to Frisco, Texas, we're going to talk about ours. You can live vicariously through what we have to say. We'll break down the good and bad, maybe give some pointers on, hey, if we get to go back, what would we do? And something maybe what we might avoid. Well, we'll break down the game. After that, we're going to talk about maybe how we can close the gap, how we can get closer to North Dakota State. How can we do what Georgia did to Alabama on Monday night? And then we'll get out of here with some Golden Cooley questions. We have a couple, and we always appreciate those in the fan interaction. But first, before we do anything like that, let's talk about what's in our Golden Coolies tonight, Thorny. What do you got, buddy?
I was at the store tonight trying to figure out what kind of beer to pick. Like, do I want a sad beer? But then I saw this beer, and it reminded me of our trip. I thought it'd be a good a way to remember the trip. I am drinking a Johnny Utah Pale Ale.
Ooh.
And if you know, you know why I picked out Johnny Utah, right?
Yeah, we watched Point Break on Saturday night. Yeah.
We capped our championship Saturday game tired in our hotel, falling asleep watching Point Break. So I got Johnny Utah because it's a pale ale. Borizafa is a IPA, so
yeah,
went with Johnny.
Nice.
There man. It is, Johnny
well
Utah.
Well done, dude. That's such a good beer. Well, I don't have anything in a Golden Coulee. In the church I go to every January, they do kind of like a 21-day fast. And most of the time I picked fast from beer because why not, right? So I have my Bobcat mug and I have some tea tonight, some hot tea, some ginger turmeric tea from Trader Joe's. It's all right. I kind of wish I was having a cold beer, but this will do for right now.
Yeah. I mean, this is like the quintessential time to finish off the season with the beer. I'm good for you for your convictions, but mine's tasting pretty good, not gonna lie. You can live it in. You can live vicariously through my beer.
Yeah, there you go, bud. All right. Well, hey, let's start this episode off with talking about just the experience getting to Frisco, our experience at Frisco, and I guess let's go back to the just getting there. Getting there was pretty wild.
Getting there for me was pretty easy. I know lots of people had lots of problems. I had a rough night Thursday night. That was my only problem is I decided to fly out at 7 in the morning from Seattle. I live about 2 hours north of Seattle. So I didn't go to bed late because I was still packing because I was a slacker. And then my daughter was up like in the middle of the night. So I got like 2.5 hours of sleep broken in half at some point. To get up at like 2:45 in the morning to drive all the way down to Seattle, get on the airplane, but that went smooth. No problems there, no delays. In fact, I think we arrived early, got the rental car. I'm glad we rented a car. But then I drove straight to the stadium so I could pick up our press credentials and take some pictures of the stadium while there was nobody there because you weren't there. You weren't coming until like, what, 6:25, right? That was your flight?
Correct.
So I had just time to kill. Thought I'd go check out the stadium. So that was my my experience. So my first piece of advice to anybody is go on Thursday. And my very first thing.
Yeah.
This is Friday. I'm running like 2.5 hours of sleep and I never take a nap. And we'll get I end up like going out and doing all the fun stuff and staying up late and all that stuff off 2 hours of sleep. So first piece of advice, get in the day early. But yeah, so that's just my getting in part. How was yours?
It was a little bit more interesting. My flight left Spokane at 9 that morning. It got delayed an hour. And then that pushed my connection flight in Seattle really close. So when I flew into Seattle, I was actually running through the airport to get to my gate. And when I got to the gate, they were boarding. I probably maybe had 2 to 3 minutes before my zone got called to get on the plane to Frisco. So that was a little bit nerve-wracking. I remember flying into Seattle, just really worried. You and I were texting back and forth, and it was really bumpy. I got a little bit motion sickness coming into Seattle and then a little bit motion sickness coming out of Seattle. So it was kind of a tough day to start for me getting to Frisco.
Yeah, and then you get there, and I pick you up, and you know we pretty much go straight out to the party. And you hadn't had like anything to eat.
Oh, no, because, yeah, right? Like, I had to run through the airport. I didn't get a chance to get any food. And then when we got on the plane, the lady was like, I was like, hey, could I have some crackers or something? And she was like, yeah, I'll bring around the cart when we get there. And I was like, okay. But I started getting like the watery mouth because of the motion sickness. I thought I was going to throw up on the plane, honestly. And I was able to get some food. And, but yeah, I just didn't feel good. I felt better when we got out into Frisco, although it was really cold. I was very surprised how cold and windy Frisco felt right off the bat. But yeah, we went out, we met some of our podcast friends over at, I don't remember what place it was called. Was it called McDuffie's or
Scruffy McDuffie's or Scruffy Duffy's? One of the two.
Yeah.
I always want to throw a Mick in there. I have no idea if there's a Mick in there.
Yeah. It was probably 99% North Dakota State fans.
Very
and it was loud.
Populated by Bison fans.
And so I think you and I had one beer there. We talked to a couple of our buddies and then we left. We went to a quiet, low-key place, got some food, and then we went back into our hotel, which was probably the best call for the night.
Yeah, that's where we ended the night. I don't know how much people really want to hear about this, but I met up with Driscoll Cat before you got into town, so I actually hung out with Shane for a little bit. We went and got some sushi, and we parted our ways, and I picked you up, and yeah, we went out after that. But actually, no, Shane and I went to the Concrete Cowboy, which I'm sure people, if they've read Bobcat Nation, realize that was the place to be for the Bobcat fans. I had no idea. He was just going there to see a friend, Shane was. But we get there, and the first thing we see is like Travis Johnson hanging out right through the glass. You can see Travis Johnson in there. There's tons of ex-Bobcat players in there. Jeff Choate was in there at one point, I think, but we saw Travis Lule. We briefly talked to Mike Person. I mean, Cody Kirk was there. Like, pretty much all the Bobcat guys you'd ever want to meet were at the Concrete Cowboy. It was packed. It was 100% Bobcat fans. I don't think there was a single Bison in the entire place. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, I think, honestly, my favorite part of the night was hanging out at the hotel bar, chatting up with some Bobcat fans there. That was a lot of fun. And we kind of closed that one down on Friday, which is midnight.
Yeah, we stayed at the Hyatt. Is that correct?
The Hyatt Regency in Plano, which is attached to the mall. Sticks up like a giant thumb out of a mall. It's kind of weird.
There was more Bobcats than I saw North Dakota State fans. I think that for is sure. A relatively new hotel. That would be the one thing, one of the things I would say, if we go back, I want to go back to that place because that was fun. Every time we went downstairs, the lobby was kind of like a bar, restaurant area. It was just Bobcat fans completely down there, just talking it up, chatting, meeting people. We saw Jeff Choate down there again. He was kind of, I think he was staying at there.
Yeah, he probably like, did. Pretty late at night. We saw him like 11:30 or 11 p.m. Like Jeff Choate was out and about the hotel. Yeah. So yeah, Jeff Choate was there. After the game, I know I saw Ty Okada there, so I don't know if that's where he was staying, but it was a big Bobcat center point for sure. And yeah, we talked to a lot of Bobcat fans, and we had a good Friday night there. And makes it nice because you just go up your hotel, you go up the elevator, and you're back in your room. No driving, no rental cars, no Ubers, no nothing.
Absolutely. So let's talk about Saturday.
Game day. Game day. That was a different experience. So many lessons learned on this one. I in particular wasn't feeling super good. I had a little bit of a headache for some strange reason. We decided to get a smoothie because that's usually, we did that in Bozeman. We went to the game too. It just makes you feel better. We got a smoothie. It was terrible. Never go to Smoothie King. That place is absolute garbage. Orange Julius, any of those places are better. Go get a naked protein bottle. You'll be much happier than that place. But the problem was getting to the stadium was it took us, what did you say? About 45 minutes to go about a half a mile.
Oh, easily.
It was painful. Terrible. We're coming from the west side. Terrible. It goes under the highway and there's cars coming from our angle from the right, which is like downtown Frisco. And then straight of us, which is like the east side of the stadium. They're all converging into this one entry point. It was chaos and it took so long. And we had the parking pass for the press credentials. We were just trying to get there. And once we got in and to our spot, it was great. We parked pretty close to the stadium and that was easy, but it took us a long time to get in. We didn't park and get out of our car until about 9:45 or 9:50 in the morning, I'd say. And we left our hotel at 8:45 to go get a smoothie or even 8:30 possibly. It took us quite some time to get to the stadium. We didn't get off as early as we should have, but lesson learned on that one, figured out a different way in. I don't have good advice because all I know is what you don't do this. That's all I can tell you on that one. just Uber from your hotel and have them drop you off like a block or two away. You'd be much happier.
Yeah.
But
that wouldn't have been bad. There's all these strip malls everywhere. So you could just go to a destination like that and then huff it to the stadium. Yep. We clearly saw the Montana State tailgating scene. It was huge.
Huge.
Big tent, throngs of cars and whatnot. And then that bled into the North Dakota State places where they were tailgating. Ryan and I did not go into the tailgates right away. We actually went into the stadium. And that was the only good thing we used our press credential for was that we just flashed that little badge and that got us right in through a side gate. And we had the foresight to buy our tickets prior to the SDSU game. So we bought VIP tickets. We splurged a little bit between Ryan and I. We just thought, you know, hey, we're going to do this. We might not ever go back. Who knows, right? So we splurged in. That VIP ticket got us into the Hall of Fame section in the stadium. And there was like a roped off area where we got free food, not free food. I mean, we paid for it, but when we got into that section, there was stand up tables, prepaid food. Right. There's free drinks that you could have. I got chicken and waffles. You got like a burrito of some
chorizo
sort, but
burrito,
it was, just,
which was,
yeah,
way
was very nice.
Than
a very,
smoothie.
Very, it was really awesome to start off the football game. And this was all indoors, like glass face. So you could see out on the field. And I thought that was probably one of the coolest things we did. Like, I would love to, like, if we go back, like, I know people would say, I'll just buy a standing room ticket, no doubt, and just, you know, walk the concourse, whatever. No, I would love to go back to that VIP section, because when we actually did get to sit out on at our seats, it was just like this little mezzanine up there, and they had padded seats, and you and I were right on the rails. And so essentially where you and I were, if the fans could picture this, if they looked back to see where ESPN's cameras were on the big perch, we were just to the right of that.
Yeah, the whole thing was covered. So if it would have rained much more, it would drizzled all morning, and I don't think it ever rained too bad, but it was nice not even have to worry about it.
Yeah.
I highly recommend that, especially for people who don't love to like go tailgating.
Yeah, good point.
Like, if you don't want to go out there and mingle, like, I'm actually not a huge tailgate person. So, it's nice going up there. It was just relaxed, kind of a chill environment. It has its own private bathroom. So from 9 to 11, the kickoff was 11, Texas time. There was the free food and the free drinks. But then once that game started, then there was just a cashless bar and just had your standard drinks. But yeah, I mean, there's not very many people there. So the lines were like very short. You had your own private bathroom, so you don't have to worry about huge lines in the bathroom. It was a cool thing. It was a little pricey, I guess, compared to the other tickets, but I don't think it was unreasonable for what you got. So I'd recommend it.
Yeah,
it was it was a fair amount of Cat fans in there. I think mostly Bison fans, but our section was very, very Bobcat heavy. Our very specific little part of the mezzanine was pretty much Bobcat fans all around us. So that was cool.
All right, so we'll fast forward through the game, because we're going to talk about the game at length. And then after the game, we walked the stadium just to take in the sights. What did you think of the stadium, Ryan?
I thought it was pretty cool. Like, we're not going to talk about the turf. I'm talking about the stadium itself. There really isn't a bad seat in the entire area. The standing room only, most of that was actually covered. So, and when I looked up, I saw the SRO stuff. It looked like mostly Bobcat fans had purchased those tickets. So that was a cool stadium. I thought the angles were good. Like, I liked how, so we were on one end zone, the complete other end zone, I think is where they have like concerts and stuff. It's clearly like a bandstand, but they had two sets of bleachers and they had both bands right next to each other. The Montana State's marching band and then the North Dakota State's marching band. And they were right next to each other. And it was a pretty cool experience having that like in the other end zone. So I thought overall it was a pretty cool stadium. I think just about the right size for our level of football.
Yeah, good point. That's what I was going to say. I thought it was a perfect size. It would be a great stadium just for college football, like a perfect fan size stadium for college football.
It would. Yep.
All right. So we walked the stadium and we got to kind of take in the concourse upstairs, and then we went out towards the tailgates because we wanted to meet some of the fans that we had connections with, and some from just, you know, just our buddies, and some from the podcast that had reached out and said, hey, hey, come meet us over here. And so we got to shake some hands and meet some other Bobcat fans that we were just introduced to. And that's pretty wild out there, honestly, even after the game when it was over. After the game was kind of like this ho-hum, like, oh, well, you know, the Bison won again. And the Bison fans, they were, this is one thing that I really thought was interesting. They were like, just like, yeah, we won. That's pretty good. I mean, they've won all nine of them that they've been to.
They're expecting and, to win, right? They have to be. That went exactly according to plan. They're probably hoping for a challenge, honestly. They're like, yeah, that's probably disappointing.
They weren't overjoyed. They weren't going crazy. They were just like, they were walking out, and it was just like walking out from a conference win. It just appeared to me. And so
that's really what it is.
I just knew, like, if Montana State would have won, it would have been pandemonium. Yeah. Just like Cat fans would just be like outside themselves. Whereas the Bison fans were, like you said, as expected, like, that was a good game.
I think it kind of
was a little closer.
I think it was borderline pandemonium in the Bobcat tailgate after the game. People just,
oh my God,
man, it was just one big party for Bobcat fans the entire weekend. Cause I think, and I've read this on the board, you just run into people that you haven't seen since like college. You're like, holy cow. Like, what are you, you're here too? Like, it's just, it's crazy. I ran into a couple people like that. Everywhere you go, there's Bobcat fans. I think people were just there just to be part of the community that they probably don't get to be a part of very often. Like us, being Bobcat fans out in Washington who don't get to go to games very often, it was just really cool being surrounded by Bobcat fans. Again, it made you feel like you were in like Bobcat Stadium for a minute, even way down in Texas. So I think a lot of people were enjoying that after the game. There's plenty of ex-players out there too. We met a couple, actually, introduced, and that was really fun. And Travis Lilley was walking around there again. It was just like, it was really cool. And it lasted a while too. They weren't going to kick anyone out anytime soon. And there's tons and tons of Bobcat fans still out there. And yeah, it was a blast. I'm glad we decided to not leave the stadium directly like we had initially thought because we were so down. Let's just go back to the hotel. Like, eh, let's go check out the tailgates. We got a couple people invited us to the tailgates who, you know, want to meet up with us. Let's put in the appearance. But I'm so glad we did. It was one of the best parts of the trip.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the tailgates were certainly fun, but then kind of a stark reality came in, was like, all right, we got to get out of here, go back to the hotel post loss. That was a downer, because all of a sudden all the hype around the weekend, at least for me, was kind of crashing down. I was like, oh, now I got to think about going home tomorrow. Now I got to think about football's over. Now I got to think about reality setting back in again. And so we went back to the hotel. We sat down in the lobby, commiserated with some Cat fans. I think that's when we saw Ty Akata and his crew over in there. Got a little bit of food. And then you and I, we had reservations for Del Frisco's Steakhouse later on that night in downtown Frisco. Was it downtown Frisco where that was?
I have no idea where that was. Man, you're driving all sorts of different directions at one point, and I was so confused on like my sense of direction. It all looks exactly the same. The architecture, everything is identical no matter what direction you drive.
It's just flat in like Southwest architecture.
Flat and beige. Yes, right.
Big. They were right. There's some big things in Texas.
Yes. And toll roads every which way you go to.
All right. So here's a piece of advice Ryan and I want to give out tonight is we went to this really fancy steakhouse and we did not know how fancy it was going to be. We were reading up on it and it stated that you have to have a dress code. Of course. And what did we bring to Frisco?
Bobcat shirts and various other kinds of Bobcat shirts. Long sleeve, short sleeve.
Yeah. So there was a lot of food options. If you get to go next time, if we get to go next time, which we will, I'm bringing in some nicer clothes, at least one change of nicer clothes So if something like that happens again, we don't get caught with just Bobcat polos and blue jeans and stuff like that.
Nope. We made it in, had a really, really good steak, and that's when we decided to go back to the room and put on a movie. We happened to see Point Break on, and that was the end of that. That was the end of our trip, basically, to Frisco.
Yeah.
We did a few things Sunday, but nothing much.
All right.
That was it. So.
No.
It was a blast, man. I think it's a cool spot. I think just having all that stuff within driving distance, there's so many hotels, there's so many restaurants. We didn't hit up any of the popular things like the tight ends or the place that people recommended go. Not really their cup of tea. But it was a lot of fun. It's a cool place. There's something for everybody. The stadium was pretty nice. The turf was garbage, but the stadium was pretty nice for fans. I think it's a good spot, and I'm hoping we get to go again. But yeah, big advice.
The thing I loved the most was just the pride I had being a Bobcat. Bobcat Nation showed up.
That's for sure.
In droves. They represented well. I thought, you know, NDSU runs that town. They have that thing down pat. Like, the whole town caters to the Bison.
They do.
Montana State came in and just held their own fandom-wise. And it was just so cool to see that many Bobcats out there. And like you said, people you knew, people you didn't know, people you hadn't seen for years. It was awesome. And I know every single Bobcat out there thought the same thing. It was just the pride that you take in being a Bobcat was on full display.
Yeah, highly recommend going. If somehow we go again and somehow you can't get a ticket, man, I'd go down there, just tailgate and enjoy the weekend. Even if you don't,
absolutely.
Even if you're not able to get in the game somehow, like, man, it was, I'm guessing there's quite a bit of people still out there all game long. But anyway, highly recommend. It was a good weekend. A really good weekend outside the few hours that the, you know, football was played. Other than that, fantastic.
Another thing I want to give just a shout out to is just like all the people that said they listened to our podcast. That kind of just blew me away. They're like, oh yeah, you're Ryan from the R&R. I'm like, yeah, I'm one. And that's the other one over there with the beard. And that happened more often than I thought, and it was just not that we were going around just saying, hey, I'm Ryan, you know, have you ever listened to this and that? But, you know, it comes up in conversations or somebody knows you or somebody says, hey, do you know who that guy is? And you're just like, that was kind of cool. I got to admit, that was kind of cool.
It was kind of cool. It's kind of surreal. Like, I'm never been treated like a, quote, celebrity at all. Most I'll ever feel I suppose. But it was.
They just knew who we
were. Well, yeah, I mean, that's. We're famous in a very, very small, weird little niche of people. And I really appreciate that. And it was pretty cool. And I don't know. It's validating in some ways. It makes you feel good. So I appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
We're known. All right.
People know us.
All right. So dozens, we just spent about half an hour talking about us.
Yeah, that was way more than indulgent. I was anticipating that to take. So if you're not asleep yet, let's talk a little bit of football, which will... Won't put you to sleep. Probably make you mad, though. Or sad. Mad or sad.
All right.
Smad.
All right, Tony.
It's a word I made up.
So.
Oh.
Do you have the stats?
No, I don't. Let me go get the stats. So rusty on this.
That's your job.
It is my job. Talk about stuff. I'm so bad at delaying. How about the Cat Grizz basketball game? That's pretty nice, huh? All right. Finally got the stats pulled up here. Let's review the stats. The North Dakota State Bison take home the national championship against your Montana State Bobcats, 38-10. The Bison have 23 first downs for the Bobcats, 17. The Bison converted on 8 of 13 third downs, which is a very good efficiency for them. 5 of 15 for the Cats and 2 for 4 on fourth down. The Cats ended up with 335 total yards, and the Bison had 506 total yards. 380 of which were rushing yards, with 126 passing to go with it on 9 of 13 by Cam Miller there. The Cats ended up throwing for 179 yards on 15 to 31 attempts. 31 passing attempts. I don't know if anyone would have seen that coming.
Yeah, right.
156 yards on 34 carries. The Bobcats ran a lot of plays now that I'm looking at this, but obviously the yards per play were pretty low. Just two penalties for the Cats, two procedural penalties, if I remember. I believe two false starts, three for the Bison for 38 yards. The Cats had the one interception there thrown by Tucker Rovig, and the Bison were able to win the time possession battle 33 minutes, almost 34 minutes, to the Cats, just 26. You want to get into the personal stuff? That's usually where you take over.
Yeah, I got some personal stats. Rovig was 13 of 28 for 156, one touchdown. He had 51 yards of rushing. On 8 carries, he had one interception. Afonso had himself a day. He had 18 carries for 84 yards, and he was running tough. It was good to see Afonso back.
He looked in the fully healthy to there. Me.
Yeah. we're going to talk about it, but he smacked some dudes out there.
That was 30.
Lance McCutcheon Five catches for 106 yards. Honestly, Lance McCutcheon could have done better, in my opinion. And we'll talk about that too.
Right,
but you know,
bat.
I'm not going to dog on Lance McCutcheon. I shouldn't say that, but he missed a couple big plays, back to back plays. That
let's get into that.
Yeah, all right, we will. Let me talk a little bit about the Bison though, real quick. I'll just run down a couple stats because this is impressive. Cam Miller, I mean, pretty much his stat line all year: 9 for 13, 126 yards. He had 41 yards rushing on 9 carries. Kobe Johnson, 4 carries for 106 yards. He had that long touchdown that was just a backbreaker that put them up 21-0, 76 yards right there on that carry alone. Quincy Patterson, their bruising other quarterback, almost had 100 yards. He had 11 carries for 98 yards. Hunter Lipke, the guy that just doesn't want to go down. What? How could you tackle that dude? That dude just looked unreal to me. 14 carries, 82 yards, 3 touchdowns. He was the MVP of the game.
It's like watching Mike Alstead.
Merrick Will. Yeah. Well, I was like, that would be a business decision for me. I'd be like, do I want to take this guy down? Of course I would try, right? I mean, if you're in the national championship game, but he just had a full head of steam everywhere he went. Tamarick Williams, 9 of 58. And then Christian Watson, they didn't even really have to use him, but he had 4 catches for 61 yards. Most notably, he caught a backbreaker right on the first possession they had on a 3rd and 15 and converted it for 22 yards. Yeah. And I kind of knew right then. I was like, dang it, this is going to be kind of dicey.
Cool. Thorny. Let's talk about all the talking points while we're running down the stats. My name is Ryan Foley.
All right. Sorry.
All the big talking points I had. You already blew through all of them just by going through your stats.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, I just wanted to paint the picture. We'll get into it right now. Let's talk. First of all, okay, Montana State comes out. We move the ball really well. Tommy Mellott. Well, one thing I didn't mention, Tommy Mellott, he played 7 plays only before he gets his ankle twisted up. He had 2 passes for 23 yards and 3 rushes for 11 yards. And you know what? We came out, we hit that seam pass. You know the one I'm talking about right away. It's almost like a fake run and then just a quick strike for about 13 yards to Lance McCutcheon on that very first play or second play in there. And I was like, man, we were so jazzed on that. And we marched all the way down to, I want to say like the 30-yard line, somewhere in there. Tommy gets hurt. Like, we didn't see it. And I don't know. Did you tell me Tommy was hurt? I can't even remember Tommy getting hurt.
No, you didn't see anything from our vantage point. I just got a text from a buddy that said, "Rip Tommy," sad face. I'm like, what do you mean,
oh,
Rip Tommy?
Man.
I had to go on Twitter and I saw Sam Herder tweet like, Tommy Mellott coming off with a real bad limp. I'm like, I didn't even see him limp off the field. Like, I didn't see any of this.
Yeah. I think it's a high ankle sprain, man. I saw a picture from Brooks Nuanez and the way it looked is just kind of a bad moment for him. The NDSU tackle just kind of wrapped him up and rolled on top of it, and it just got caught underneath him. And, man, what a sucky moment for Montana State.
Yeah, wow. I mean, the wind was taken out of the sails, I think, real quick on that play because we had been moving down, and I wanted to talk a little bit about that injury because it happened on the second down play, I believe. Because the third down play, we came up, and that's where second down play, he had like an 8-yard run. So we end up with like 3rd and 2. And I don't know if this influenced the play call or not, but that's when Tommy like hobbled back and gingerly threw up a fade to the corner of the end zone to, I don't know who it was, to Stewart or McCutcheon.
It was McCutcheon.
Not sure. But it was sailed out of bounds. It was uncatchable, which was probably impacted by his gimpy ankle. But I don't know if it's a 3rd and 2 and he's not hurt, because I know the staff knows at this point he has to be hurt. If they call a different play and we try and pick up 2 yards, but I know for a fact the 4th down play, like I feel like we would have gone for it on 4th down if Mellott would have been healthy, but instead we roll out the fake field goal that went not as bad as it could have. It could have gone worse, I suppose, but like a net 10-yard punt in the end. So I think like we're on the 30-yard line or so, we punt it in the end zone. And I get why he did it. I'm pretty sure NDSU sniffed it out really well, and he's punted the ball in the end zone, which I think is actually a pretty headsy play if you think about it from that angle. But you know, Tommy's injury really impacted that drive and obviously impacted the rest of the game, because I'm not so convinced we don't end up at least with three, but possibly a touchdown on that first drive, which changes the dynamic of the game. I don't know if it, if we want to talk too much about if the Cats would have won, if Tommy played all game, blah, blah, blah. But I think the game would have been different in some ways. I just watched that, rewatched that first drive, and I was like, man, the Cats had some momentum going there, and Tommy's injury and subsequent fake field goal, which I don't think would have been called if Tommy wasn't injured, you know, changes the game right off the bat.
Yeah. Well, then NDSU has a 11-play, 80-yard drive in which they overcome a 3rd and 14, a 3rd and 7, and a 3rd and 5 to go up 7-0. That was such a frustrating drive to watch right after Tommy Malacco's out. So I was just kicking the balls right there.
So that's the one you were talking about with the big conversion, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like 3rd and... How do we back them up? Was it just a couple stuffs? Was there I don't know if we sacked them. Was there a penalty? But yeah, it was like 3rd and like 16, I believe. And they got like an 18-yard pass.
Trey Webb got behind there. Yeah, and we had a tackle for a loss. Trey Webb blew up a play, and Cam Miller just sat in the pocket untouched and just hit Christian Watson there. Just threw it right over Simeon Woodard's head. And right between number 5 for us. And it was a really good play. And they just kept marching. We had them in, like I said, 3rd and 14, 3rd and 7, 3rd and 5. They connected on all of them.
You really start to realize why the quarterbacks at North Dakota State are so good. And it's not necessarily, like, they've had some very good talent, but you give most competent quarterbacks like 5 seconds of a complete clean pocket, they're going to find somebody. And that's what North Dakota State does. They just have such a good offensive line that the quarterback, they do those play actions and he rolls out and he just sits there flat-footed. He has no cares in the world because no one's going to get close to him. And I saw that when I watched film against other teams, and that happened out on Saturday when the Bobcats played him, and Cam Miller, when he has time, is easily going to make a play. And the few times we were able to clash the pocket, he had enough... You know, kudos to Cam Miller. He had some nice little runs that just enough to get first downs, and it just kept drives alive. Like, that's, Bison were so good at keeping the drive alive. What were they, 8-for-13, I said, on third down conversions? Like, we just couldn't get them off the field.
No. When they needed 6, they got 7. You know, it was kind of, it was a little bit like that, right?
So then our next drive is a pretty decent drive again.
Yeah.
So Tucker Rubick comes in. Makes some nice throws, a couple nice runs. I think he had a 19-yard run on that one, which, did we record this or not when you were betting me money that Tommy Mlott wouldn't have a 20-yard run?
I have no clue what you're talking about right now.
We were talking about that. You were all like, Tommy Mlott's not going to have like a 25-yard run. He's not going to scramble 25 yards.
I do remember that. He didn't.
I was like, bet like $100. Like, I think Tommy will get a 25-yard run. My point is, if Tucker Rovick could have got a 19-yard run, I'm pretty sure Tommy Mlott could have got a 25-yard run at some point.
Yeah.
On that run alone.
Probably right.
Because, I mean, the holes were there, and I think Rovick did a pretty good job, but like if Tommy Mlott's in there, those aren't necessarily 80-yard touchdowns or anything, but you know, they're going to be 20% longer gains than Tucker Rovick easy. But Rovick does a nice job leading the offense down. I don't know what killed that drive. I don't remember watching it. It may have been a false start that got us into like a 2nd and 15 or something like that. But then that's one we do go for the field goal, and Glessner just pushes it right. And it's just like, man, it just feels like this could not have started much worse. Because then North Dakota State comes right down and scores a touchdown on the next drive. And before you can even blink, before the first quarter is even over, it's 14-0. Tommy Mlott's hurt. We've had a failed field goal, fake field goal attempt, and then we've had a missed field goal. And it's like, at that point, you're feeling like, is this game over? Is this game over already?
Here's a weird stat for you. During the playoffs, Montana State had allowed, I think, like 90 yards of rushing per game. After the first quarter, North Dakota State had already eclipsed 100.
It's not surprising. I mean, watching the game, it's not surprising that that's what the statistics were. I'm surprised that NDSU was able to do what they did so easily. They were 3 yards under their season average in the first half. I think they had 268 yards in the first half, and they averaged like 271 per game or something like that. They were right at their average, and the first half wasn't even over.
Hmm. Yeah. For Montana State to have two good drives with come out with 0 points, and then North Dakota to do their thing to come up with 14 points, just huge missed stop. It felt like the game was over at that point, and it probably was. Yeah. I mean, we had some really good offensive plays throughout the game. I thought Montana State in general throughout this game moved the ball fairly well. I didn't feel like our offense was the problem. We were missing our electric player, Tommy Malott. I don't think that can be understated. Like you said, does this change? Who knows, right? Who really knows? But Tommy in the playoffs, he had 449 yards passing, and this is three games, 411 yards rushing. He counted for 11 touchdowns that he was responsible for. To take that guy out of the game plan, seven plays in, and Tucker did a great job, no doubt. But even with Tucker in there, I thought the Montana State offense did okay. They weren't getting dominated by NDSU. Where we were really having troubles with is the offensive line for North Dakota State. They were just kicking our butts.
They were. And we'll talk about the biggest keys to the game, the biggest keys to the loss. And obviously, I mean, the obvious thing is the lines. But I want to go back to something real quick here. You're talking about Tucker Rovig, and we're still kind of going chronological here. I don't know if it's 21-0 at this point, or was it 14-0, but we tried the exact same pass two times in a row to Lance McCutcheon down the sideline. So this is the second quarter because the ball's coming at us. We had very good visual sight of these plays. And for Lance McCutcheon not to come up with either one of those balls, it just kept continuing. Like the Bobcats not making plays, just not being able to get it done. Like that was just, at that point you realize like it's just not our day, right? Like, he's got to come up with that one. The second one in particular goes right through his hands. Like, we have watched the replay. It goes right through his hands. And it's just like, yeah. I know that when you have a new quarterback in and the ball drops at a different angle and they put different spins on the ball, I know that there's adjustment and all that stuff. And I don't think Rovin had really been practicing or anything. But, and I even joke with you after those two passes, like, maybe McCutcheon just doesn't like perfectly thrown balls. He prefers the underthrown garbage balls where he can basically shove the defender out of the way and catch the ball. And that's what he ended up doing on his touchdown that he had there at the end of the game. But, man, he catches that second ball. I don't remember, like I said, I don't remember if it was 14-0. But there is a scenario in this game where Tommy Malott doesn't get hurt, or even if he does, we finish off that drive with the touchdown. And all of a sudden it's 21-14. At this point, if McCutcheon comes down with one of those throws and we're able to punch that in, I mean, the game is different if the Bobcats just make some plays. I'm not going to talk about injuries or anything. There was a few opportunities, and we just didn't grab them, and that's, you're not going to win a national championship against an 8-time defending national championship team by not making the plays when they're there to be had.
Yeah. You said it right, Thorny. Lance wasn't the only person that wasn't making plays. I mean, Rovig had his chances. He missed Lance on a wide open touchdown. And I think right in the second half, right at the very beginning of the second half, Lance had boxed his guy out on a back shoulder fade, and Tucker just put it over his head. Pickering missed a ball right in his hands down the middle on a slant. That would have been a really big chunk play on first down for us. It was just little things. You know, Callahan O'Reilly gets washed. Misses a tackle, misses even finding Kobe Johnson. Kobe Johnson scatters 76 yards to get a touchdown. It was plays like that all day long. So just kind of key moments where big-time players kind of just didn't step up like we had, I don't know, maybe we had seen earlier in the season. So didn't capitalize on those moments.
No, I mean, the one guy who was stepped up, I think, the best he could have was the guy was consistent for what we've been used to, was Isaiah Afonso.
Yeah.
He looked healthy. He looked strong. He completely trucked a guy. And he slipped, too. Like, so he spun out of that hit. And if he wouldn't have slipped, I don't know. He's able to get under 5-10 yards. He was running hard. But the point, we just got so far behind that we had to kind of just start throwing the ball to have any chance. And, you know, I would have liked to have seen what we could have like we're talking about a situation where it's even 28 to 14 at halftime. Like there's still an opportunity to kind of stay within your game plan going in the second half, but 28-0 at halftime, yeah. Game is over. It is over. I don't even really need to talk about the second half all that much because the first half was the ball game.
Yeah.
But yeah, it came down to their offensive line just ate our defensive line for lunch.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't even
those close. Guys are legit.
They are legit.
Those guys are that is the watermark right there. When you look at their line and then you see Quincy Patterson in the diamond formation back there with Hunter Lipke.
It's intimidating to watch as a fan.
The Kobe Johnson, Tamarack Williams, and you're like, how are we even going
all to those stop guys this? Are and, bigger than our linebackers, except for maybe Troy.
Yes. Absolutely. ESPN flashed a stat like in the fourth quarter. They kind of broke down some yardage plays for them. They make their money through the A-gap, and we had heard that. They're the power running team through the A-gap. They had 203 yards rushing through the A-gap. They had 62 yards rushing through the B-gap, which is outside the tackles right there. Is it? No, that's between the tackles and the guard. And then they had 80 yards on the outside. So they like to run it right up the gut, and they were doing that pretty efficiently. Thorny, I do have a question about that. Do you think Montana State made adjustments as far as the defensive goes to stop that?
I couldn't tell you. Not in the first half, I don't think. And in the second half, game plan changed so much. The dynamic of the game changed so much, it didn't really matter. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just noticing that, you know, we had our typical four-down linemen and Trey Webb and Ty Alcata. They were doing a lot of run support. With filling gaps up there. So, but we didn't have like five guys on the line. We blitzed not very often from what I could see.
I would have liked to seen us take some more chances when we're down, especially like 21-0. Like, what is there to lose? You got to start trying to blow those running plays up. And if you're sitting back in base and they somehow still did a rollout and then they had that tight end or whatever, like wide open, no one within 20 yards of him on one of their touchdown plays. Like, why not just blitz everyone? If you're going to just give up wide open touchdowns anyway, why not send the house? Like, I don't know. It just was NDSU's play calling is so good and their deception is so good. And they're pulling linemen and fullbacks and just mucking up the middle and getting like, once they get a hold on a guy's jersey, like it's over. Like there's no getting off the blocks and they mucked it up and they just, you know, they did a great job of taking out one of our strengths, which is our linebackers and our defensive line, eating up enough blockers to letting our linebackers and even like Ty Okada make plays. Like they just, everyone was a hat on, was on all the hats. And that's why there was always a guy just running wide open because all the defenders were taken or they bit badly on something and were completely out of position.
Well stated, buddy.
Painful to watch. Painful. We need him to make Cam Miller throw the ball 20 times to have a chance to win.
Good point.
And he threw the ball 13 times. We never knocked him off their game.
To him once.
Offensively or defensively. We didn't knock them off anything that they wanted to do. Never once. Never once did North Dakota State not do something they didn't want to do.
That's a good point, man. I hadn't really thought about that. We had them on their heels. First drive of the game. We were pushing it, and then, you know, we talk about it, but... Well,
what do you think of that play call? I want to ask you real quick. What do you think of the play call for faking the field goal? Did we get too cute with our trick play? Did we try and do a little too much?
It was weird because, right, Tommy goes out. He gets pulled or no. Yeah, so like you said, it was 3rd-and-2. I don't know. Run wildcat right there. Direct snap to Fonse, to Troy, to someone, you know. Pick up the first down. We crossed midfield quite a bit, actually. Yeah, maybe it was too cute.
Bring Rovic in and do the same thing you did with Rovic all game long. Have him run the RPO. Rovic can fall forward for 2 yards. He's 6'5".
A couple times, it was 4th and short, and we were trying the deep ball. What do you think about that? It worked once.
We were, if I remember correctly, we were already down pretty big at this point, so why the hell not? I don't know. After a 21-0, I don't think anything really mattered in my brain. It's like, it's so dominating that I don't see us having any chance. So let's, you know, what does it matter at this point? I got no real criticism or critiques of anything. I hated that they scored right before halftime. That was, if there was any glimmer of hope, it was extinguished on that last 28th, fourth touchdown of the half.
And then they score first possession thereafter. So, yeah. Although Montana State did, I mean, when you look at the drive chart on the second half, we did all right. The ones, I thought they were going to hang a 50 burger on us.
Yeah.
They didn't. I don't know if they let up or if they were just playing some guys. I doubt they did because it was pretty chippy till the end. But Montana State, we played a little better in the second half, but it was lost at that point.
They didn't let up. They just started not having to pass the ball.
Just running the clock.
Yeah, they just went into their, we're just going to run the ball, and if we don't score, who cares? We're winning by four touchdowns.
All right. Well, this is depressing me breaking down all this play. So let's talk about a little bit about what do we need to do in order to close the gap. Let's move into that segment of the podcast.
I mean, get bigger on the offensive line and defensive line, and the right kind of big, not like Sam Houston State offensive line big, where they're just a bunch of big fat guys. You need those what the phrase heard a lot, like the flat tummy big guys.
Yeah,
guys that are 290 but muscle lean. We just need to get bigger on the defensive line, man. I think we're there in a lot of other ways. I'm not even going to talk about cost of attendance and we can talk about those things, but if you want to just get down to the nuts and bolts, we just need to be bigger and meaner on the lines.
Yeah.
Particular defense.
I totally agree. They tout their strength coach. I think his name is Jim Kramer.
Been in like 25 years or something ridiculous. So yeah, I think it is like Jim Kramer.
And weren't you telling me he has some sort of jurisdiction on like who they recruit or who
that wasn't they allow me. I read that somewhere where he has like the final say on like a recruit or something, which seems, I don't know if I buy that 100%, but clearly he's able to identify guys that guy can put on the right kind of weight. Yeah, I'll take him. I don't know. You know, he's probably got a big influence in the department, and clearly it's working.
Yeah. Well, you know, Montana State's defensive line was probably the strength of the team. We just got manhandled. Absolutely manhandled. You know, I don't know how far we are to getting to that, but it seemed like a pretty distinct difference.
So this is the only thing I'm going to say about the turf. I think the bad turf neutralized the strengths of our defensive line, which is...
What do you mean?
Which is speed and doing stunts and twists, and the turf was bad, and I think it kind of influenced that. Like bad field conditions are going to favor a downhill running team. It neutralized the speed on the defensive line. Now, I'm not saying the game would have been much different in the end, but that's what MSU's defensive line is built, was more just kind of been able to get after the quarterback or blow plays up. We had so many tackles for losses and so many sacks. We weren't super good without Chase Benson anyway about just stopping things dead, like power run games. We saw Idaho State just run for 4 yards a carry against us like 50 times in a row. Like power run games isn't exactly what our team was built to stop. We were good at getting a lead and then pinning our ears back and getting after quarterbacks. And when we were down and we never had the opportunity to, we just kept getting pounded and pounded. So I think in reality, you just got to get bigger and deeper and more physical, which is crazy because like all those things, we are all those things, but we're not in the SU good at those things. Nobody is. That's why they keep doing it.
Yeah.
And that's why it's going to be hard to ever catch them, man. Like, how do you ever catch North Dakota State? If they have a Wisconsin Big Ten like level offensive line every single year, how is a FCS defensive line going to compete with that?
I don't know, man.
No one has. James Madison. It's
a head scratcher. North Dakota State's 40-3 in the FCS playoffs. 40-3 in the FCS playoffs. And in the last 11 years, I think ESPN showed like a stat, and I'm going to butcher this, but it was like 148-9. That's what they are in the last like 11 years.
They don't lose.
They were comparing them. They had two stats up. They had two like a split screen Alabama and North Dakota State. North Dakota State has like nine national championships. Alabama has five in the last 11 years, and just everything. It's just this parallel between both of these programs. And it was like, yeah, they are the Alabama of the FCS. And so now Montana State has to become the Georgia of the FCS.
The hard part is
James Madison's gone.
Yeah. The hard part with the FCS is compared to the FBS, like Alabama, like, so FBS is the highest level of college football. There isn't a step above it. So when you get to the FCS, you can have a bunch of guys on your team that could be FBS, that could be playing at a higher level.
Yeah.
You don't have that in FBS. So there could always be a talent gap in the FCS because you're going to get guys that, frankly, should be at like Wisconsin or Michigan or Ohio State, like an offensive lineman who could be in those places, but he's going to be at North Dakota State because he probably has a better chance of going to the NFL by being at North Dakota State. So there's always going to be this talent gap because they consistently put guys in the NFL, and you can always have guys that are higher than most people in the division because, like I said, there is a higher level of football above us and guys fall through the cracks. So I don't understand how anyone's ever going to catch them, especially with a couple of teams that have been the closest just went to the FBS. And honestly, they're probably going to do worse. And I guarantee, like, in 3 years, if North Dakota State plays Sam Houston State for some reason, they'll just beat the snot out of them. Because the winning tradition for some of those teams, like Sam Houston State, that's not going to happen so much anymore. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
I kind of like the last thought on that, too, Ryan, is I underestimated how much importance the been there, done that thing for North Dakota State in Frisco actually was. They had that whole weekend from the game, from the fans. They just knew how to navigate that. And going into it, I was like, no, that's not a big deal. It's whatever. The game's played on the field. It doesn't matter. To me, I think that having experienced it now, I think it matters. They call it Fargo Frisco. You know, Frisco whatever. South. You have whatever you want. Frisco South, all right?
Fargo South. Gosh, Frisco South. It is Frisco. Fargo South. Yeah.
So.
Question for you.
Well, yeah.
On that same subject.
Okay.
Would we have been more competitive in Fargo?
Ooh. When? Like if we had to play it 3 weeks?
Yeah,
after,
the national championship in the FCS is played at the number one, the higher seeds site.
I mean, I think you could probably make a case for it. I mean, it's turf, it's indoors. So you like you said, you negated some of our defensive sauce. Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, the Fargo Dome is weird. It's not a great venue. It seems like there's some sort of elixir that North Dakota State has when they get to Frisco. It's just like it's injected into their veins. They just ride that momentum. I don't know.
Our guys have been to Fargo, so they would have known what to expect going to Fargo. I think it probably would have been a little more competitive in Fargo, which is just weird to say. I don't know how much more competitive.
Good question. Good question, though, man.
It's hard to know. Like, you know, Tommy Law was injured. That's going to, regardless of where the game's played, that's going to be super hard to overcome. But, I don't know. Just a question that I didn't really have a good answer for, but one I came up with. I'm like, I wonder, you know, that was like a big national championship event in an unfamiliar area. But it's familiar for the Bison. They've been there every single year. So, I mean, that was an advantage, and we didn't talk enough about it, I guess.
Don't make excuses, though, right? I mean, this is not to you. This is just like what I see on like the board, the chatter right now. People are trying to find some sort of loophole. We just got our butts kicked. Just own it. Move on.
Their offensive line
get better.
Ate us alive. It doesn't matter. That's the end of the game. It's so simple.
Though. We made it there, man. That was awesome. It was a great, you know, in hindsight, take a step back, look back where we came. The playoffs were awesome. That was the best part of the season. Absolutely.
Do we have any specific questions that kind of could work here going to the Golden Coulee stuff? I know Cat Fanatic 84 asks us, he asked this a while ago, but he said this might be better post Frisco. He'd like to hear your take on what's the next step facility wise. We've seen the pictures of the guys practicing in a frigid Bobcat Stadium to get ready for the championship. If we're going to the playoffs in the future, we'll be practicing in December. We desperately need an indoor practice facility. East Grandstands are treacherous for the semifinals, which I imagine icy weather. Yeah, and lack of handrails caused several falls on the ice.
Ooh.
Man, I think if you're going to be playing football in December every single year in Bozeman, an indoor practice facility, it's got to be kind of high on the list. Plus,
it's a must.
It's a must. Plus, it's going to help us in the spring, too. Like, we've had some really nasty springs where we haven't even been able to have spring football or missed practices in spring. Like, I think that's so beneficial to the Bobcats. Like, even if we're not making deep playoff runs every year, it's going to be useful in the spring.
Recruiting. Hey, you don't want to play in the cold weather?
Arms race,
practice in the cold weather? We got this right there. North Dakota State is building an indoor practice facility, a 37 million indoor practice facility. Rich just keep getting richer, man. Montana State needs that. Absolutely, we need that. That needs to be priority number one. Number two, what was it, Cat Fanatic? I think, yes. I've always wanted the East Side stands to get renovated to have some sort of, press box. I think it would just look really cool. It would just enclose the stadium a little bit more, make it a little bit more loud as well.
Yeah. It needs something. But, if you're making me pick one, it's a practice facility.
Yeah.
Someone said this too, like, the Cats are always playing catch up in facilities. We're never leading the country in facilities. And that's a good point. We've closed the gap. We've done so great since Wadad Cruzado took over. I mean, that was I think she came in right off the bat and really kick finished the bowling in the end zone. Kick finished, the opposite of kickstart. got the south end zone bowled in. So that was really good. That was the first big step. And then we just got the athletic center done, which is going to be, hasn't even paid off yet in terms of like the dividends that we're going to get from that. Well, this is the first year it's been in existence. So it'd be nice to see the Bobcats be a front runner and not just barely playing catch up in the arms race. Even at the FCS level, there's such an arms race. And, the Bison have the full cost of attendance. They have world-class facilities. I mean, they're going to be hard to catch, but the Bobcats, if we keep it going, I think we can do it. But the practice facility, big, big one.
Oh, yeah, for sure. All right. I think we got some more Golden Coulee questions.
Yeah, let's finish out the Golden Coulee questions. I kind of just awkwardly shoehorned in the Golden Coulee bit because I thought it was kind of pertinent to the closing the gap discussion we were having. So let's get on to the rest of the Golden Coulee questions.
All right. Beastins MSU asked us, who was your biggest surprise contributor this year? Doesn't have to be a star. Someone who just played solid snaps all year. And who do you expect to be the breakout player for next year? Can I go first on this?
Yes.
All right. My biggest surprise contributor was Simeon Woodard.
Yeah.
I just think he is lights out. He didn't have a great game in the national championship game, but he was definitely a key contributor in the late in the season and just a stud. Or a freshman.
Just a freshman.
Wow, that guy's just going to be awesome. Who do you expect to be a breakout player for us next year? I'm going to go Brody Grebe. I think that guy is a star in the making. He's going to cause havoc off the end. I think he is just flashing right now. And I think this, I don't know what his ceiling is, but he's big, twitchy, fast, mean. I love it all. So yeah, that's my guy.
I mean, that's my biggest surprise contributor for the year is Brody Grebe. Like, I don't think he had a good high school debut and everything. I wasn't expecting him to come out and just look that good so quickly and make such an impact right off the bat. He was a huge part of our success, especially getting after the quarterback. So Brody Grebe is my pick for the surprise contributor. Simeon Werder was a really good choice. I really like that choice. But breakout player next year, without having to pick Brody Grebe for three of the four things that we're going to talk about here, I might as well pick Danny Yu, because somebody's got to come in there and be Troy Anderson's role, right? So someone's got to come in there and be a new linebacker. He's the guy that you and I have been high on, Danny Yu, and whose name I still don't fully know how to pronounce. Yula Le Kepe. I shouldn't have tried. I should have just left it at Danny U. But I think we'll learn how to say his name pretty quickly here. I think he's going to be the next linebacker if assuming Callahan O'Reilly stays around. We got Danny U and Callahan O'Reilly right next to each other. If we're doing a 4-2-5, but anyway, Danny U, my pick.
No, we also got Nolan Askelsen.
True. Yeah. It'll be nice having him healthy again.
I think you and I are going to start this Brody Grebe bandwagon. We're going to take that thing. We're going to drive the train. That's what it's going to be. It's going to be the train. So, all right. Okay. I think we have one more at the bottom. If I could scroll down, there it is. Colorado Cat, always giving us content. I love you, Colorado Cat. You always help us out. Outside of the game, what were your highlights and lowlights of the weekend? Highlights for me, I think I already talked about it, was just seeing Montana State just Bobcat Nation, man. Bobcat Nation was loud and proud and in full force down there. It was outstanding to see how many Montana State Bobcats. It was just this reunion of everyone. Players, coaches, fans. All of us. It was so much fun. So that was definitely the highlight. Low light. Not planning my Sunday out as well. Honestly, it was so much time at the airport. I feel like it was a waste of a day. That flight getting back to Spokane was really late. And maybe what Thorny said, I might have tried to get out there on Thursday. That would have been. Like in hindsight, man, if I could have gone on Thursday, I would have gone on Thursday. You know, if my wife would have let me. That's always the big, right? Who's got kid duty for?
Yeah, no, it was days, right? My wife barely survived as it is. So I'm sitting here recommending Thursday, but not necessarily sure that I'd be willing to pull it off.
Yeah.
My answer is exactly the same as your answer, both of them.
Really? What would we do on Sunday if we could go back. We hit a really nice breakfast spot.
It's more just coming in on Thursday instead. It's really like,
yeah,
my Sunday was fine. Like I was actually happy with me how I left on Sunday. But yeah, just getting in a day earlier. So you're traveling and partaking in the festivities all on the same day. And that's the only day. I don't recommend that.
Yeah, getting in late Friday night, it just felt like it was like, okay, go meet people, and then you got the game.
Yeah.
I would have liked to just have all of Friday just ready just to, hey, hang out.
Yeah.
Just meet up with people, go find a good spot to eat. There was plenty to eat down there. Holy cow, tons of places we didn't even get to. All right.
But I'm agree
Colorado with your, Cat, good stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with your high real quick. I just want to reiterate how awesome it was seeing Bobcat Nation out in full force there. Meeting Bobcat fans, meeting people who were familiar with the podcast, just chatting football with so many people, seeing like people in the Seattle airport, just tons of people wearing Bobcat gear. Like that was really cool for me just to see that. It made me feel, I don't know, like I'm a part of the Bobcat Nation again and not just some remote outsider who just never actually gets involved in anything. I thought it was really cool. So my highlight for sure.
Do we have any Twitter questions?
Yeah, Russell Dam asks us, who was your favorite person to run into at the national championship? He ran into high school friends he hadn't seen in 20 years and some of his closest friends he hadn't seen in a long time.
I think Russell's a Great Falls kid. I think I remember growing up with him. My favorite person running into was my friend Dino. I saw my friend Dino and his dad Dean on the plane in Seattle. And I hadn't seen Dino since we graduated. He was like a kid I grew up playing baseball with and sports with, and one of my good buddies from my childhood. And so I was standing in line going into the plane. I looked to my right. I'm like, Dino. He's like, Foley. And so we had one of those moments, and that was super cool. So that would be my answer. And also seeing Pete, our good buddy Pete, and meeting Mike over in the tailgates, and holy cow. Got to see Travis Lule walking around, King Lule. I mean, there's a lot of people. But yeah, I think I'm going to go back and say Dino and Dean.
I mean, we were introduced and chatted up with Brent Swaggart for a little while.
Yeah.
So that was cool.
And then meeting a fan of ours, or a listener, I would say a fan of ours, a listener at our at the hotel, Mike. Mike was fun to talk to. He had a lot of good stories, and he loved talking football, so...
like to talk with Mike again and, you know,
for sure,
continue keeping in contact with those guys.
For sure. For me, you know, just some old actual friends, like not necessarily Bobcat fans or people that, you know, I ran into my, met up with my old friend, John, who I've known since like second grade. Just kind of crazy traveling all the way down south to meet up with someone that you've known since second grade that you have contact on and off over the years. And here, you're here being bound together by the same like event. You're here for the same reason. That was really cool. And then outside of, you know, it was really cool meeting Shane up again. Like Shane's a good friend of the podcast. Mm-hmm. Like we went out and had sushi together, Shane and I. That was really a lot of fun. So yeah, just actual people that I were friends with beforehand. Number one. And then, yeah, number two, just meeting people, chat Bobcat football with Mike at the hotel was awesome. And, shout out to, I don't know. Should we just say his name? I don't know. But, we gave him a golden coolie at the tailgate. We met a couple fans at the tailgates who invited us to their tailgates, and those were both really fun. We weren't sure if we should say your names or not, so we'll keep it classified, but that was a lot of fun.
You know who you are.
You know who you are. Roger Alrighty. Fisher asks us a little bit more game-related question here. We have an amazing defense, but on Saturday it looked pretty bad. How much of that was NDSU's big hogs up front, and how much of that was our defense just not executing? Were there other factors? I mean, really, for me, I think it's just the hogs. We already kind of talked about it. Yeah. I think the game plan wasn't particularly good either, if I'm being completely honest. But executing, don't know about the execution, but we were out of position a lot of time. They fooled us. They fooled us bad many times, in addition to dominating us physically. So that's a bad combo.
Yeah, I agree with what you said.
Miles Miller and his, yet another question about his signs. if you want to see that one, just go on the Twitter. I don't know. That's not one to really talk about necessarily on the podcast because it doesn't make any sense to talk about a visual thing in an audio medium. But thanks for asking the question, Miles Miller. Why not? He says, in the future, should he avoid making signs centered around an individual or it was a bad luck?
You made a sign about Tommy right?
Touchdown. Yeah, it says he had Natty, the acronym. NDSU is afraid of Tommy or Touchdown Tommy year round. There's your NATTY. And then a picture of him looking sad later on. It's pretty funny. It's got the happy sign picture and then the sad, the sign's no longer present picture. Well, I mean, it must have been bad luck, I guess. That's what we get for celebrating an individual over the team. That's what happens, I guess.
So are we using Miles as the scapegoat?
Well, if we give him all the credit for all the other wins that we've had in this season, then he's got to take the fall for when we don't win, I guess.
Keep making the signs, Miles. Don't listen to Thorny.
He's just asking if should avoid it, and I'm going to say, I mean, we're superstitious, so yeah, avoid it. It didn't work.
Yeah,
I'm not blaming you, but I'm just, if you're asking me to chime in on that, I'll say no more individual signs. I think it's better to mock the other team. That was working out for you. Steven Hodge asks us which team benefited more from being in this year's championship in terms of recruiting and exposure and like fans, gaining fans, bandwagons or whatever, and fundraising. I mean, that one seems to me pretty obvious. The Bobcats have to.
Yeah, I was going to say the Bobcats.
I mean, NDSU's already got that brand. Everyone knows. But now we're here. Now we got our name out there on ESPN2 and the exposures. And now you can go around recruiting. Hey, we played the national championship this last year. We hope to be there again, or we're going to be there again. And, you know, I think that's going to be a big little boost. I don't know how long it'll last, but it'll be at least a year's boost out of it. I hope it gets some fundraising done. But we'll see.
Yeah, well, you know, I remember thinking, like, when we were walking out of the game, going to the tailgates, it's like, we have to get back here now. Like, this is the taste in my mouth. Like, I want to get back here. I want
the
whole experience again, and I don't want to wait long. I want it tomorrow. I want to do this again and again and again and again and again. I know that might not be realistic, but I think that's where our goal is. It's what Coach Vegan says. We're about winning championships. We got to get there. And we did it in his first year. There's no reason to believe it's not going to continue to happen under Coach Vegan.
Man, speaking of Coach Vegan, he like choked up in the post-game press conference talking about the guys just believing in him and buying into his system, and I'm choking up and we're all choking up. Like, man, I like Coach Vegan.
Yeah.
Like that was just one more, like, man, he just cares that much. I haven't really seen that like super emotional side of him, and that was really, I don't know. Got me.
Yeah.
West Wilson, our buddy West Wilson. Sorry we couldn't meet up, West. I think we are close many times, just never quite got in the same spot. There were lots of positives this weekend, despite the outcome of the game. What do you think was the best part of playing in the national championship for Montana State? And for him, it was just seeing how many fans showed up at Texas, friends and strangers, runs deep. I mean, we're getting into these questions about stuff that we already talked about. We used to be so good about sprinkling in questions. We'd read them ahead of time and like it could sprinkle them in as we're talking about a pertinent subject. But I mean, that's it for me. I think just how well Bobcat Nation just showed up. We talked about it many times, but it was so awesome just being there. I think that was really, it proved that Bobcat Nation is big and dedicated and will show up to these types of games. And I think now that we have all that experience about how to kind of navigate it, and if we get back, I think there'll be even more Bobcat fans because we'll be smarter about figuring out how to get tickets and hotels and booking flights on Thursday. So if there are cancellations, you still have an extra day. All these kinds of things will only help the Bobcats next time.
100% all that. Bobcat Nation showed out. The pride I had all weekend long. He said it best. Nice job, West. We should get West on the pod. He'd be so much fun.
Yeah, we should. We should. He was posting pictures of like him hanging out with all the players and stuff. It's like West had a good time down there. And I love seeing that. I love seeing ex-players still be super involved in the program. There were so many ex-players down there. It was awesome. Like there were so many of them. Like the video that MSU put out, like I think it was like what, two, they said 200 ex-players or something like that. Just all generations of players. It was really cool to see just the entirety of Bobcat Nation in terms, like not just fans, but like people that have been associated with, have been players. So awesome.
It's an experience. It's really cool.
So if you're listening to this and you're probably thinking like, we didn't really talk about any careers or seniors or anything like that. Well, we are going to do an episode like that probably next week, maybe 2 weeks. I don't know if we'll take a week off, but we'll do a season recap. We're going to talk about the seniors and all the guys leaving the program and pray them and talk about their accomplishments. And we just wanted this to kind of be a more of a therapy session for us about the game and giving praise to the Bobcat fans and Bobcat Nation for showing up. So that's kind of what we'll cap the entire season off with our next episode. And maybe there'll be some news about the defensive coordinator. Hopefully not any real transfer portals. Out of MSU, maybe some in, we'll see. But hopefully there's some news to talk about. But is there anything else you want to say on this, Foley? That's kind of the game plan moving forward, but anything else you want to say here?
I think we covered most of everything that I wanted to cover.
All right. We're an hour and 15 plus into this bad boy, so let's call it, man. Bobcat Nation, be proud. Be proud of your team. Be proud.
You bet.
Of yourselves, like the Bobcat Nation, for showing up. It was historic season, something I'll never forget. So many great memories from this season. And we're going to talk about those still next week. But let's get out of here, man. You can always find us on rrcatcast.com. You can find us on Twitter, rrcatcast. Email us at rrcatcast.com. Thanks, everyone, for listening all year to these rambling two-dad normal fan guys try and pretend like they know football for an hour every Monday. Really appreciate it.
Oh, my gosh.
And Foley, let's get out of here with the Go Cats.
Go Cats.
Go Cats.